This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to the hills from overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, hopefully they're going to be the views of Dr. Russell Blaylock. But tonight we're not going to talk about medicine as we usually do. We're going to talk about what's going on in the world today. And there is an organized, orchestrated, very cleverly planned program to turn the Christians of this country against the Muslims, as I'm sure there's a program over in the Muslim countries to turn the Muslims against America and against everything we stand for. But certainly there's an organized effort to convince the American Christians to lead this battle in a great crusade to put down the radical form of Islam. Now, I have no question there is a very real problem with the radical form of Islam, this jihadist view, of creating a world Muslim society. But most Muslims don't adhere to that. It's really only a very, very small group that do. And, of course, remember, of course, that the Ottoman Empire that ruled all of the Near East, the Middle East, and North Africa for hundreds and hundreds of years, but they suddenly were put down after the First World War, and there really was very little of this radical form of Islam among the average Muslim until recent years. Oh, there was the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, there were the Wahhabis in Saudi Arabia, but they were only really a very, very small number of people. And then along comes MI6, British intelligence, that begins to fund the Muslim Brotherhood and encourage this radical form of Islam, because it's a divisive force that if you want to rule the Muslim world, you want it divided. You certainly don't want it to be able to unite against your rule. And that was what the British MI6, that was their job. Keep the other side, keep the people you're trying to subjugate divided and bickering back and forth among themselves. And then, of course, after the Second World War, why the CIA took up that same job, and you go into the background of the funding of the Muslim Brotherhood and these radical Islamic ideas, they largely came from the United States. In fact, it was during the 1980s when the United States Information Agency put out 51 million jobs to print up textbooks that were used in the madras schools throughout Afghanistan and Pakistan and the Muslim world, when these textbooks were pushing this radical form of Islam. Why would you do something like that with $51 million unless you were trying to encourage the radical form of Islam being pushed in your books? Well, now, of course, we do have this radical form of Islam. It's spreading throughout the Muslim world. And there's a call, we're going to have some sort of a war over there. My goodness, if we don't do something, Iran's going to get the bomb, and they're going to threaten the world, and they're going to attack America, or something ridiculous of this sort. And, well, I wanted to talk to Dr. Blaylock about it. I know he took a trip recently, and he had the opportunity to share his views with a number of the people on the cruise that he was on, and he told me about it, and I just wanted him to share his views with us here. Good evening, Russell. Thanks so much for being with us. Why don't you let people know how you feel about this? Because I think I'm very, very concerned that sooner or later we're going to get into a war with Iran and perhaps with the Muslim world.
Well, yeah, I had a friend of mine who was involved in all of this for a long time, and he told me long ago. He said if the United States ever gets in a war with Islam, it's going to be devastating for the United States. And he was at this conference, ironically. I hadn't seen him for 20 years. And I talked to him about it and told him I remembered him telling me that. And so he said,
Hold that thought. Go right ahead, Russell.
And so we talked about it some more. And, you know, basically, the Cold War was being fought between the United States and the Soviet Union through the Islamic Nation. And the Soviets were creating a training school for these terrorists, the Patrice Lumumba School outside of Moscow, which was the largest terrorist training camp in the world. They taught them how to make the bombs and supplied them with all the high-tech equipment to blow up airliners and assassination techniques. And so it didn't, of course, the United States has to do their counteract activity. But secretly, behind all of this, and this, as I began to talk to people in the group, they were more aware and said, well, you know, a lot of that is for public consumption. Behind it is this group of people who's manipulating the world through international finance and then propaganda networks. We're talking about Council on Foreign Relations, trilateral Bilderbergers. These people dominated by the David Rockefeller group. And their idea was, you know, in my estimation, of course we don't have absolute proof or documentation, but just my viewpoint, if you're asking for it, is that they want to use this war on terror to, number one, increase their control in the United States, increase the power of the government, increase the power of the police, powers of the government in the United States beyond anything we could ever imagine. And at the same time, redirect the whole finances of the world, because what this has done, because we're fighting two wars at one time that are protracted, it's bankrupting the United States. I mean, we've spent $1 trillion on all this so far, and now you're talking about bringing in a third country into a war. And, of course, Iran is infinitely more powerful and well-organized than is either Iraq or Afghanistan. Then you have two big power players, China and Russia, that are supplying all the weapons into the to this conflict, and the United States turning a blind eye. I mean, we know that China is pouring all these weapons, and all of the weapons are either Chinese or Russian. And they're high-tech weapon. They're using the Russian satellites to...
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Dr. Blaylock. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Russell is basically saying that right now it's very obvious that there are people who really want to get us into a war with Iran. And certainly there is a group, the sort of people who run the world, people of great wealth, led by David Rockefeller and the trilateralists, the Council on Foreign Relations, Bilderberger groups. And they said they want to get us involved into this war. But this war could have really serious complications. First of all, because China and Russia are providing all sorts of sophisticated arms for Iran. And Iran is not going to be an easy war like certainly Iraq or Afghanistan. Neither one of those countries had any sufficient defense at all. And it's already cost us $1 trillion for the war in Afghanistan and Iraq. What's it going to cost if we go to war with Iran? So you pick up the story there, Russell.
Yeah, and as I told them on this cruise, I said, you know, they were all in war fever, talking about we need to do it, we need to stop the bomb and all this stuff. And I said, well, you know, if you look historically, no country or empire has ever survived a protracted war. Going all the way back to ancient Greece on, if any country involved itself in a protracted war, eventually it exhausted its financial resources and collapsed. Well, we're talking about doing this at a time the United States is in dire economic straits by design. And then you're going to enter a third war. Well, what do you think our enemies are going to do at that point? Well, then you're going to have Venezuela agitating, ready to take on the United States, then Cuba, then North Korea. So what are we going to do? Go to war with the entire world at the same time? Well, they know that'll just make the United States topple very rapidly. And there's an article in Foreign Affairs about the American Empire and its collapse. And they said that when the American Empire collapses, it's not going to be a slow deterioration. It's going to happen almost overnight.
Now, for our listeners out there who don't know, Foreign Affairs is the theoretical journal of the Council on Foreign Relations. And they really sort of ran the world until 1973 when the trilateralists took over. But the articles that appear in Foreign Affairs are really for the elite. And obviously, they are concerned about this possibility of a collapse of the American Empire. So go right ahead.
Yeah, and that was his point, is that everybody to this point has been talking about America slowly deteriorating and slowly disappearing and or changing. And he said, no, it's going to happen as a dramatic, catastrophic event very rapidly. And you're just going to wake up and suddenly it's no longer there. Well, I can't think of a better way to do that if you examine history from the very beginning of recorded history than have a protracted war. Well, we went through Vietnam for 10 years. It cost the United States dearly. And, of course, at the same time, Lyndon Johnson was running the enormous expansion of the welfare state, which is exactly what we're doing now. We have two wars going on that are massively expensive, and at the same time, we have the Obama administration bringing in one of the most catastrophic costs to the United States, the health care. With this massive expansion expenditure over a protracted period of time, there's no way the United States can continue the way it is. Well, secretly and less secretly than before, these international groups are openly talking about restructuring the entire financial structure of the world and bringing in a world government. Of course, this was a dream all along, and if you follow how all dictators came into power, they create a crisis. When people are disgruntled, when there's tea parties, when there's people rebelling and people talking about freedom, what you do is you create an international or world crisis of such monumental proportions, all the opposition stops, everybody joins together for this common cause. Well, every dictator, Hitler used it, Lenin used it, Stalin used it, everybody that's, seeking absolute control of their country has used this formula. It's not a new formula. And this is what I see happening now, is that this Obama administration is creating a situation of enormous financial consequences, putting us on the brink of national collapse, and at the same time engaging us in massive war expenditure, loss of life, serious injury to our most productive members of society, our young people. It's being painted all over again. I'm just amazed that people can't see it. And when I was at this conference, a lot of people were grumbling, typical politics, that, oh, the Obama administration, if we could just get Obama out of power. And I told them, I said, well, you've got to quit talking about Obama as if he's leading this. He's just a puppet. The people in the smoky rooms, in the shadows, the CFR, the trilateralists, they're the real string pullers. And they're designing this. And they're using his administration to do it while they hide in the darkness. And there's only a handful of us that know who's pulling these strings. Well, like I say, I regularly read Foreign Affairs, and a lot of their publications, as Stan does. I mean, you read an enormous amount, a lot more than I do. And once you start reading their own literature, they're quite open about what their plans are. And that's the problem. When I talk to people and say, well, there's no conspiracy, and I'm against conspiracy theory, well, I say, number one, the reason you made that statement is because the propaganda forces have made it just socially destroying if you ever say you believe in a conspiracy, that somehow there's something wrong with you. Well, as I tell, and I told the people on the cruise, I said, and I used a bunch of examples, I said, now give me a rational explanation of why that occurred. Well, they couldn't. I said, now, if there's a conspiracy, if there's a group of people who have a worldview that, and they're powerful enough and wealthy enough to bring it about, does it not make a lot more sense? And they had to admit, yeah, it makes a lot of sense if there's people directing this and there's a purpose for these things and a reason for it. I said, so you've got to get past politics as usual and start looking at, well, who's really behind this? What is their goal? What is their aim? And they've written about it. They've written about it for 100 years in a lot of literature. They make bones about where they want to head the world in the United States, and that's toward a one-world socialist dictatorship, you know, of a milder type. It's not going to be like a Stalinist dictatorship. You know, it'll be one that's ad hoc socialism. It'll be restructuring the entire finances of the world. It'll be destruction of sovereignty, be dismantlement of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, establishment of a world court, a world taxation system, a world military. And you can see it's all coming about according to the design that Stan and I have been reading about and a lot of others for many, many years. You know, when I was in high school, my dad introduced me to all of this stuff. And when I first started reading it, I said, well, this is kind of a fantastic stuff. I can't believe these people have this much power and somebody's not talking about it. When I was in college, I read a lot more. I started ordering different investigations by the government that they were doing into these things, like the Tax-Free Foundation. And it became a little bit more clear, but still you didn't see blatant evidence of it. Well, ironically, over the years, now that I'm a lot older and seen a lot more, it's all open now. They're no longer trying to hide it. You know, people don't remember 30 years ago, if someone attacked the Constitution, it was the end of your career as a politician. If someone talked about dismantling the sovereignty of the United States, it was the end of your political career. So they kept all these things silent until they could propagandize the younger generation and bring this about. Well, now we have both administrations, the Republicans and the Democrats, talking about dismantling the American sovereignty and the Constitution. And until the Tea Party, there was not a lot of backlash to this proposal. But they're more open about it. They're no longer hiding it in their specialty journals and secret papers. It's open. They talk about it on the national news. They talk about it in many of the open publications and newspapers. And this should shock people. But as I said, people like Stan and I who followed this all this time, it's a lot more shocking to us because we read about this when hardly anybody else knew about it. And we couldn't get anyone to listen to us. They thought it was just too fantastic. Well, now people don't think it's so fantastic because the day has arrived. The day we've read about all these years is here. And as I tell people, this is the end of the game. We're in the fourth quarter. It's over. So either people are going to make the right decision and stop this juggernaut, or it's going to be a lot different world than they dreamed of.
It certainly is, and they're in the process of simply dismantling our economy. They're transferring our jobs overseas. They're transferring our wealth overseas. They're transferring our manufacturing overseas. They're encouraging our employers to hire legal immigrants coming in on H-1B visas. They're encouraging our certainly employers to hire illegal immigrants, and that's what all this falderal is about. Arizona trying to stop the illegal immigrants from coming in here, and they're simply working and taking the jobs. And this is why the entire media is up in arms against Arizona, and they're saying California is going to boycott Arizona. And well, the people in Arizona think it's a great job, and people all across, a great idea to control illegal immigration. Most people do, but not the people who control the media. Well, go ahead, Russell. I mean, it should be so obvious to people as we look and see what's going on today that they really are in the process of destroying the economy of our nation. Certainly, you know, one time we were producing 18 million cars a year here in the United States. Last year, we produced about 10 million cars. We'll produce about 10 million cars this year. And over in China, they're going to produce somewhere around 16 to 18 million cars. And it's just going to go downhill from there as more and more of our industry and wealth is transferred to India and to China. And this is not happening accidentally. It is happening on purpose. And the average American, nobody ever points out to them that we are actively encouraging the illegal immigrants to come in because the people who run our government want illegal immigrants to displace American workers. When do you think the American people are going to wake up? We've got 20 to 25 million unemployed Americans today. And that feel it's really going to get a lot worse than that as time goes by.
That's exactly right. And when I talk to people about this conspiracy idea, I say, well, you know, here's some imponderables. Think about this. And one of the greatest is the immigration. Here you have a Republican president, George W. Bush, who claims to be a conservative. And you have massive influx across our borders. We're told as Americans that we're in danger of terrorists coming into the United States secretly. Yet we've opened the southern border. We know Al-Qaeda has come across the border. We know weapons are coming across. We know the Mexican military has come across. We know they're bringing in high-caliber weapons, not just a few rifles and shotguns, but they're grenade launchers, RPGs, big weapons are coming across that border in very large amounts. We know very violent gangs are coming in, the type of gang that will have no compunction of killing a judge or a senator or anyone that gets in their way. And so you say, well, why did this conservative president for 8 years absolutely refuse to do anything about it, even though the vast majority of his really strong supporters kept insisting he do something about the immigration problem. But he was silent. He put up every obstacle to any impediment of the immigration. So you can't say, well, he was doing it to get votes because the Republicans were never going to get votes from him. That was a guaranteed Democratic vote. So what did it behoove a Republican so-called conservative president to make sure the border stayed wide open during a period of terrorist threat? Then you have the Obama comes along, and of course he makes sure the border is going to always be open. Well, there's a couple of things about the open border. Number one, the people coming across now, as recent reports are showing, are no longer people looking for jobs. They're gangsters. They're dangerous Mexican drug cartels pouring into this country, bringing drugs, weapons. They're involved in kidnapping, murder, rape on a mass scale. They're infiltrating the cities, destroying the cities, taking over previous gangs, working and networking with the Russian gangs. So you have to ask why. And then you say, well, the public health officials have repeatedly said, secretly, well, you know,
hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment. Well, yeah, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Dr. Russell Blaylock. Now, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Our guest is Dr. Russell Blaylock. He's just talking about the fact that George Bush refused to close the border. He knew that the people were coming across, the terrorists could come across, drug pushers could come across. There was a health problems, people coming in here with all sorts of diseases. But the biggest thing was, of course, the massive influx of illegal immigrants who were, of course, taking American jobs and driving down certainly our standard of living here, and the government knows where they are because you can't work without a Social Security card. They were using fraudulent Social Security card. The government knows where they are. They even have special funds for them so that they can get their Social Security benefits when they go back to Mexico when they retire. but they can't tell the American people that they're actively encouraging the illegal immigrants to come into the country because it violates our laws. But there are people in Washington, D.C., who have a different agenda. They are actively encouraging illegal immigration, which is why they refuse to guard the border, why they refuse to build the fence, and they haven't built the fence. A lot of it's 3 feet tall. A lot of it is 3 feet tall. You can talk to Glenn Spencer, who flies the border regularly from his home in Arizona, and we've talked many times. Why would you build a three-foot-high fence and tell the American people we've been guarding it now and they got nothing to worry about? We've got the fence almost done. A lot of it's 3 feet tall. Go right ahead, Russell.
Yeah, and of course, the question I ask people is, how do you explain this in conventional thinking? In political thinking that everybody's talking about. Well, you can't. There's no explanation for why two different administrations are carrying out the very same policy of endangering the United States. And like I said, it's not just the violent gangs pouring in here and weapons and drugs. It's also all these diseases. For instance, Chagas disease was very rare cases ever occurred in the United States. Now they're occurring all over Mississippi, Louisiana, Arizona, New Mexico, Texas. It's pouring into this country. Well, Chagas is a fatal disease. It destroys the heart. There's all resistant tuberculosis. It's all kinds of diseases pouring into the United States. Why are the public health officials completely silent about this? Why are the politicians? Why is the newspaper, the media, completely in unison silent about all of this? And if you cannot explain it by any other explanation, certainly by not by conventional politics, but you can explain it by a conspiracy. If someone is trying to internally bring down the United States so they can remake it, and it's an old Leninist and Marxist principle that to take over a country, first you have to destroy what exists. You have to destroy the culture. You have to destroy the finances. You have to destroy the whole network basis of America so you can remake it. And that's what they're doing. They're bringing in these people in droves, knowing they're criminals in large numbers. You know, something the FBI statistic said, something like 50% of them have criminal records. There's no health check of anybody coming in the country. So we're magnifying all the problems in this country. Now, if I'm aware of it and Stan's aware of it, you know they're aware of it. They know that we already had a huge gang problem in our cities. Now it's infinitely worse, and the gangs are much more violent and better organized and better armed. So there's no other explanation except somebody wants this to happen. Have been analyzing these wars that we're in, say, if you increase the welfare state in America at the same time you're carrying on two big wars, expensive wars, it's a prescription for the bankruptcy of the United States. Well, if I know that, and it's written in some obscure literature that most people don't read, and Stan knows that, you know the people at the CFR and the people in the government are also aware of it. They're not that stupid. So obviously somebody wants this to happen. And the question is why? Well, Stan has been on the radio for a very long period of time explaining it to everyone. What we need to do is start listening and use our final option, which is a vote, to vote these people out and put decent people in power so we can reverse this.
And, of course, this is the time, if there was ever a time, to start running responsible people. I mean, the primary elections are coming up. Don't think, oh, well, I'm going to vote in November. You will not vote for the candidate of your choice. You will vote for the candidate of their choice. You need to be running people at every level, whether it's the school board, the water board, the city council, the board of supervisors, running for state assembly or state senate, running for United States Congress, House of Representatives. We need people to be involved. But do you really care about preserving America? Or would you like to live without freedom? God bless America. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Well, Russell, what sort of response did you get from the people there on the cruise, you know, when you began to point out what's going on? Now, I know there were some other major speakers there, and they all wanted, of course, to get all sorts of people behind this war, coming war with Iran. There is so much propaganda out there through the mass media to drum up support for this coming war. We have no alternative. We've got to do something. The wicked Ahmadinejad's going to destroy the world if we don't go in and attack him. And I mean, after all, we've got to go over there and kill a lot of people to protect America. And of course, what we're going to do is just antagonize Muslims all throughout the world. An awful lot of them already, there was an article, I think, a program, I think it was just last Sunday, where, of course, they were talking to students in schools in the Muslim world. And an awful lot of these students honestly believe that what happened on September 11th had nothing to do with Al-Qaeda. They believe that it was people working in the American government, the CIA, who brought down those buildings as an excuse to go to war with Afghanistan and Iraq. Now, I'm not going to get into what I believe as far as that's concerned, but a significant number of the students there in the schools over in the Muslim countries really believe that America wants to go to war with the Muslim world, and that, of course, justifies, in their mind, attacking us.
Well, yeah, and that was the general sentiment at one of the meetings. It was a national security meeting we had, and that was the general consensus, was that we're at war with these radical Islamists, and the only way we're going to defend ourselves is take the war to them and root it out. Which, you know, if there's an attack on the United States, that makes sense, but you want to attack the person who attacked the United States, not a government that had nothing to do with, and that's what we did with Iraq. You know, anyone who looks at...
Oh, hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Russell. Well, this is Dr. Stan, because I guess Dr. Russell Blaylock. We're simply talking about what happened after September 11th. Now, basically after September 11th, why we had to go to war, we had to go to war with the people who attacked us, but 15 of the 19 terrorists came from Saudi Arabia. 15 of the 19 terrorists, we're told, were involved in the attack, came from Saudi Arabia. The man who has admitted he was responsible for this whole attack, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, came from Pakistan. So then, if that was the case, why did we attack Afghanistan? Well, because Osama bin Laden was there and he agreed to the attack. Well, we know from reading the report from the 9/11 Commission, I read the entire staff committee report. It is still up on the internet. You should read it. The leaders of Al-Qaeda did not want to attack America. None of the leaders of Al-Qaeda, other than Osama bin Laden, wanted to attack the United States. So why did we attack Afghanistan? And why are we still there today, when, at the present time, there are less than 100 members of Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, and yet we have almost 200,000 people there, I think 90,000 troops, almost 90,000 troops, over 100,000 contractors. Why, with there's 100 members of Al-Qaeda still remaining in Afghanistan, do we have almost 200,000 people there? Russell, none of this makes sense. Obviously, they're lying to the American people as to why they're keeping our troops there.
Well, that and the whole Iraqi war, you know, in the beginning after 9/11, well, Bush announced we've got to go to war and take down Saddam Hussein. Well, the CIA and the NSA, they knew very well that Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with the attacks. And, that was supposedly they put him in power to stabilize the balance of power with Iran. Now, suddenly they're through with him, and so they want to finish a grudge that the Bush family had with him and get access to oil. So we use this as an excuse. Well, the American people should have been outraged, and the Congress should have stepped forward and say, well, according to the United States Constitution, only the Congress can declare war. This nonsense that a president unilaterally can declare war is very dangerous, you know, because he gets us in the war, and then when Congress finally stumbles up to the podium, they're not going to resist it because we're deep in the war. So no one could even, you know, even now all the documents coming out, well, there were never any weapons of mass destruction. It was all a con job to get us bogged down in there. And then a civil war comes that they didn't even see was coming. We're told that, oh, we beat them in just days or a month, and now the war's over, the people love us, and the next thing a civil war breaks out. Then they denied it was a civil war. Well, how come our CIA and NSA did not see this coming? How come no one in the Pentagon stepped up and said, well, we have no intelligence whatsoever? And then we get in this Afghanistan war. Well, suddenly the enemy goes from Al-Qaeda to the Taliban. And then, you know, we're constantly shifting of our goals here. Well, you know, Russia wanted Afghanistan because of pipelines. It was about oil. Russia didn't want Afghanistan because they needed more desert. And so, you know, our interest has become the same thing. You know, we've really got to, and this is what happens every time wars start. The patriotism factor steps in, then the conservatives have to feel they have to be all for it. And we lose our sense. This is what happened in Vietnam. Oh, it was the domino theory. The communists were going to take over. We got to go there and fight the communists to save Southeast Asia. And so we get bogged down in there for 10 years, spend a massive amount of money, and lost lives. You know, at least a million people, our soldiers, were injured most seriously. And then we gave it all away. Just overnight, we decide, well, it's not worth fighting for, and we're not even going to give weapons to the South Vietnamese so they can defend themselves. And so suddenly the communists take over the whole area. Now, suddenly they're their most favored nation status. You can go in a store and buy things from communist Vietnam. You can buy it from Cambodia. And so you think, well, why did we spend all these lives and these ruined lives and all this money? And then your whole plan all along was most favored status, and now you're building factories and McDonald's and stuff in Southeast Asia, which was supposedly our blood enemy. You know, someone should start saying, I smell a rat here. Are we going to do the same thing here? That after the war's all over, suddenly they're going to be our best friend. You remember Clinton did the same thing in Somalia. Oh, we got to find a deed, you know, and so we send these elite troopers in there, get them slaughtered, and then suddenly a deed's our best friend, and he's flying around on Air Force Two. The American public should have been furious over that. That was the reason for impeaching Bill Clinton. But obviously Bill Clinton didn't make that decision. The Council on Foreign Relations, because the Council on Foreign Relations makes up the number one advisory board for the entire federal government, and has since its inception back in the 20s. So it has been the shadow government of the United States, because you can look and ask anyone in Washington, where do you get your information for any foreign affairs, any international affairs, any financial affairs? Well, we get it from the Council on Foreign Relations. Our advisors are Council on Foreign Relations. We have meetings. Government actually sends agents to the CFR meetings to get ideas on where we should go and what direction the United States should be moving. Well, nobody elected the Council on Foreign Relations. Nobody elected the Trilateral Commission. Most Americans don't even know who they are. Yet they have been in every government administration from the very inception of the CFR. They have gradually taken over all of the control of our government in every administration, whether it's Republican or Democrat. It's filled with CFR people and trilateralists. Ronald Reagan was forced to take them. You know, when Ronald Reagan ran for president, he had written against the Trilateral Commission before he ran for president. He was told, you will accept these cabinet members who are CFR and trilateralists, or you won't be president. And he thought, well, maybe if I get president, I can change it. Well, he quickly realized he couldn't. His Secretary of Defense was going down to South America carrying out his own foreign policy against Reagan's wishes. And Reagan couldn't do anything about it because he didn't answer to Reagan. He answered to the Council on Foreign Relations. And until the American people started looking into this and investigating this themselves, we're always going to think, oh, this is just politics if we could just get the right guy in office. Well, the people who run for office are chosen by these power mongers. I mean, look who chose Obama. It was Brzezinski and David Rockefeller. For the first time I've ever seen David Brzezinski on television, he's on television and endorsing Obama. I've never seen him open his mouth about an endorsement. So he saw that this is so close to where they want to bring America, he can come out of the shadows, appear on television, and endorse his puppet. And I guarantee you, that's all Obama is. He's a puppet. You think, you know? I tell people, do you think he designed this health care system? He doesn't even know what's in the bill. Do you think he's designed this complex foreign policy we're involved in? He has no clue, probably, where most of these countries are in the world. And certainly he doesn't know all the intricacies of all of these foreign policy networks. So he's just being told, this is what we'd like to do, and we'd like you to do this, and we'd like you to do that, and he does it. Just like Bill Clinton did, just like George Bush did, just like George W. Bush did, and all the previous presidents. They're following orders, not as a dictatorial order, but as, well, we're the people who know. We know about these things. We have experts in every field. We studied this. This is where America needs to move. And they agree. And they know that now that the CFR is so powerful, if you disagree with them and you reject them and fight them, they'll remove you from the presidency. You look at the board of the CFR and Trilateral Commission, it's the people who are the editors and owners of the major news media in the United States. So the idea that you're going to get the correct story off your evening news is ludicrous, because these people are members of the Council on Foreign Relations as well, and the Trilateral Commission, and the Bilderbergers. And they're controlling what people see, what they hear, the story they're told. So it's all packaged and given to them. And this is the real world, people. This is what you're supposed to think. And we've gotten to the point in this country now where people don't like to think. They like to be fed things. I have people all the time tell me, well, I don't want to know all that. Just put it in a paragraph. Well, this is not something you could put in a paragraph. It's like one time somebody asked Bill Buckley, why do you believe in God? And he said, well, I can't answer it in one sentence. but that's what they want. Put it in a sentence, well, or a paragraph. Well, these are things that it's taken Stan and I a lifetime to learn. We've been studying this for 40, 50 years, 60 years. So how do you expect I'm going to be able to convey all this information to you in a couple of paragraphs or 10 minutes of conversation? You can't do it. Stan knows things in so much detail, and he's read so much, and he understands this from thinking about it for decades and decades. He's got a clear picture of it now, and that's what happens. The more you think about a subject and you study it, the clearer the picture comes.
Well, we're just lucky to have a voice here, and fortunately, we've got a lot of people out there who are listening. Hopefully, they will check on what you're saying. They will begin to look at the facts, and as you begin to look into it, begin to study the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergers, you understand they basically control everything. And what we really need to do, of course, is get people to realize that if they do not get involved now, we're going to lose America because these people are intent upon destroying the infrastructure of our society, impoverishing our people. They're going to destroy the value of our currency. And all these people who've got so much money invested in bonds, they've got money invested in the stock market, they've got their pensions and annuities, and they're going to lose it all. And they have to understand that there is an organized effort to destroy the financial structure of this nation, impoverish our people, and that's how they're going to enslave them.
Well, that's right. And, you know, and I, just to give you an example of how this hierarchy works, well, who has more influence in this country, graduate of Harvard University or graduate of Ole Miss or Louisiana State University? Well, Harvard, obviously. They're elitist. They're considered the top. That's everybody knows Harvard. Well, that's what the CFR does. The CFR says we have the best experts on every subject in the world. We're the people you consult with. And so government has learned that's who you put in your administration. That's who you go to when you want a piece of legislation written. Because they're writing legislation. It's being handed to congressmen already written, saying, well, just endorse this bill and sign on to it. Well, you know, our experts have done it, and we have a vision of the world, and we understand this complex finances, and this is the best thing for the world. And when you leave, you know, as Stan knows, you really have to be careful. When you start reading their literature, if you don't know what you believe, it'll influence you. You'll start saying, hey, well, you know, maybe that makes sense. It's like depopulation of the world. You know, I've had friends that are decent, good people who say, well, there are too many people in the world, and maybe it would be a good deal to make it where people can't have but one child, and maybe we should have some enforced abortions. And you know, they start finding themselves drawn into it because these people know how to couch things to make it look like this is reasonable and rational. And so when you read David Rockefeller and Brzezinski and you start analyzing their literature, it's just a different worldview than ours. We have a Christian worldview. They have a worldview that says man should be the designer of the world. And that most people are really too stupid to be able to take care of themselves, and so elite members of society should take care of them.
In fact, David Rockefeller told a friend of mine, he was a congressman at the time, they had a meeting with a group of Republican congressmen, and David Rockefeller said, just as a casual remark, you know, some men are born to rule, but most men are born to be ruled, and of course, obviously, he thinks he's one of those who was born to rule. And he really does rule. I mean, he's one of the most powerful men in the world, probably the single most powerful man in the United States today. Well, I mean, we hear about Bill Gates and Warren Buffett being the richest two men in this country, and that's ridiculous. I mean, the Rockefeller family has trillions of dollars, as the Rothschilds and a few other families throughout the world, and we never hear that mentioned. I wonder why.
Yeah, David Rockefeller is the wealthiest man in the entire world. He owns the controlling interests of tens of thousands of corporations. And this is one of the ways he controls the media, because all of those corporations advertise in the media. And so the media knows if they lose a couple of big accounts in their advertising, they'll go under. And so all he's got to do is say, well, we really wouldn't like that story written in that direction. Here, we prepared this and by our experts, and so tell this story about global warming in this light, or we may have to take our advertising somewhere else. Well, you know, they quickly begin to understand who butters their bread. And you look at the networks now, and you look at the major newspapers, they're almost all ready to fold. This shows the degree of control. And you read back in the history, this J.P. Morgan was the first one to try to take over the newspapers. And his idea was to buy them all. And David Rockefeller said, why buy them? I'll just advertise in them, and I'll control their editorial policy that way. And in fact, I can decide who gets to be the editor-in-chief. He'll be my man. And that's what he's done over all these years, is he's just slowly put his people in positions of editorial control. And so he controls the editorial policy of all these major publications.
And
you hear the story he wants you to hear.
And once in a while, of course, somebody after they've left the newspaper come forward and tell you the truth, as Richard Harwood did. He was the editorial page editor on the Washington Post for many years. After he retired, he told you the truth, how the CFR really controls the media, and all of the media, not just the Washington Post. If you want to read the article, it's called The Ruling Class of... Media, something of that sort. Anyway, give us a call. We'd be glad to get you a copy. Well, Russell, somebody had called in and said how interesting it was to hear the news on the regular media and then to tune in and hear you talking, and really how much he appreciated a program like this. Well, you've got about a minute and a half, two and a half minutes to wrap up the program, but I certainly agree with everything you've said tonight. We just need the people to understand that we are manipulated by the media. They are taking us into a war with Iran, and they are intent upon destroying the economy of our nation. All we can do is hope that at least some people out there are going to wake up. But you've got about 2 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, Stan, I think all the credit goes to you. You're the one on the radio giving this message. You've studied all of these documents for most of your life. You know them intimately. So you're just a fountain of information. People like Dennis Cuddy, who I have great respect for, has written some fantastic books on this. And people need to go to this literature, start reading, look up the references. And as they do, they'll see these are people of high credibility. You know, this is not a bunch of conspiracy nuts hiding in their basement writing this stuff. These are people of high credentials. Highly educated, who have done intense research, well-referenced works, like Anthony Sutton. Anthony Sutton, I knew a friend of his that worked for him, and said Anthony Sutton would never write a single word unless he could prove it. And everything was referenced. And you read any of his books, they're carefully referenced. So, you know, people need to quit listening to this propaganda about conspiracy theorists and start reading this literature, and read their literature. And if they do, they'll undergo an eye-opening experience. So I salute you, Stan. You've done a fantastic job on your DVDs that I've seen you in, and your radio program and your newsletter is just absolutely fantastic. Excellent information.
Well, I just feel privileged to have an opportunity this time in my life to have the opportunity to be on the radio. We do, and have to have a family that will support me, because I couldn't do it without my family and staff. But we do have an opportunity. We're reaching more people all the time. And as long as God gives us breath, why, we'll be out here on the front lines. Anyway, God bless you, Russell. Thanks so much for being with us. And we'll look forward to having you on maybe next month. Maybe we get back to medicine. But I just really wanted to hear what you had to say. And I hope our listeners out there really appreciate it. And certainly, absolutely right. People who say, well, I don't believe in conspiracy, and I always like to say, gee, do you think there was a conspiracy behind the assassination of Julius Caesar? And what about Lincoln? Do you think, well, good night, God bless.
Good night, God bless.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Russell Blaylock. And basically, when people say, well, I don't believe in a conspiracy, I say, well, why don't you believe in a conspiracy? I mean, do you think there was a conspiracy behind the murder of Julius Caesar? I remember the old saying, et tu, Brute? Well, yeah, there was a conspiracy there. And then I say, well, what about murder of Abraham Lincoln? You know, they assassinated, they executed about five people associated with that. Do you think that there was a conspiracy behind the assassination of Abraham Lincoln? How about the mafia? Was that a conspiracy? Well, why would you think that there might be some very, very powerful people who want to take over our government? Have you ever been to the headquarters of the Council on Foreign Relations? Have you ever sat in their library for weeks, as I have, going through their papers and finding out they were planning on getting America into World War II back in 1939? Just even before the war had actually gotten well underway. Then we just need to challenge people and tell them that if they don't get involved, they will have nobody to blame if we lose our freedom. Well, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that my ministry, Radio Liberty, is primarily listener-supported. And if you're in a position to help, we'd love to hear from you. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. If you want to get it in large numbers, we'll be glad to cut the price for you. You can get the DVD. You can get the special with the book, the DVD, and the audio tape. That's the Brotherhood of Darkness special. You need to hear our talk on the forbidden secret or the secret. Because there is a secret that has been passed down for thousands of years. And you can't understand anything going on today until you understand the Gnostic religion, which came out of the Kabbalah, which came out of the ancient mystery religions, and the secret societies and their ultimate goal, the Novus Ordo Seclorum, recorded on the back of the dollar bill. And what is that occult emblem doing on the back of a dollar bill? It's been around for thousands of years. And it is the emblem of the ancient secret societies. And if you don't believe that, we carry a book written by the leading Masonic philosopher of all time, a man named Manly P. Hall. When he died, that's what the Scottish Rite magazine called Manly P. Hall. And Manly P. Hall in his book, The Secret Destiny of America. We carry that. It's on our research catalog, not through regular channels, but we have a number of his books because we want you to read them. And basically, he will tell you that emblem on the back of the dollar bill is the emblem of the ancient mystery religions, which shows this is all about creating a new world order. And what is this new world order? Well, it's to be a new structure of government, a new financial system, a new world religion, because this is really all part of a conspiracy against God. And if you don't believe in conspiracies, read the Bible. There have been very obvious that the Holy Scriptures talk repeatedly about a conspiracy against God. And that's what it's really all about. It is an effort on the part of men to replace the God of the Bible. And we are involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, cultural, financial battlefield. But it is a spiritual battle. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you can help us, we'd love to hear from you. We do carry the Miracle 2 soap products. We think that they're really great. We wouldn't be without them. We carry the Berkey water products. We carry certainly a number of health products. We carry a product called prostate support for men and menopause support for women and for people who are having problems with colds and flu. Something called immune support. They're all put out by Sydney, what I think is the finest health food product company in the country. We come out over our label because we can't market their products, but they make them for us. They even label them for us in our wonderful Christian country. Probably the single largest health food manufacturer in the country and our health product manufacturer in the country, and we're so privileged to work with them. Well, again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you'd like a catalog, or our website, radioliberty.com, where you can listen 9 hours a day on the internet. Please pray for America, pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection, and we'll be back in just a moment.